Good evening.
Good evening.
If you have your outline, I understand some of you don't. I need to print more of them from now on. I'm just going to have to crank up the number and just be okay, as I've mentioned, with having some extras on occasion. In Genesis chapter 28, though, we're going to begin and we're going to get right into it. As we have noticed through our study in the book of Genesis, there is a line of people that become incredibly important. So important that they occupy the entirety of the book of Genesis, in fact. You start with Adam, obviously. Adam and Eve have their third son, Seth, becomes the inheritor of the righteous line, is what you would call it. And through that righteous line brings Enoch. Enoch brings, inevitably, not immediately, but seven generations later, brings Enoch through Methuselah, obviously, the eldest of the people we have recorded, on to Noah, who would be the salvation of mankind through the ark and his willingness to build it. After Noah, it comes down the line to Abraham. And Abraham begins an important section and begins three or four, technically four individuals who are directly descendant of Abraham, who become the premier individuals in the Old Testament. The three premier, four premier individuals that would finish from Genesis chapter 11 and 12 on through the end of the book of Genesis in Genesis chapter 50. And so we are meeting the third, and we've technically met the third of them, a man named Jacob. And in just a short while, we will meet his son named Joseph. But for now, Jacob has just received the promise from his father. As we looked at last week, in a roundabout way, occupied it. You could argue stole it. And managed to get it from his father. And so Isaac blesses Jacob, and he finds out afterwards. And we looked at the issues between Jacob and Esau, and how Jacob was hated then by Esau, and it caused a lot of dissent and a lot of problems. And so Jacob flees. Jacob runs for his life, because as soon as their father is dead, Esau plans to murder him. But here in Genesis chapter 28, we find something interesting. It says, "Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him." Now this would be the second time, in the text anyway, that Jacob has been blessed by Isaac. And he says, "Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, 'You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan.'" And this is something we saw just a bit ago with Abraham. Abraham had made the same requirement of his son Isaac's wife. Now the interesting thing is, we noticed with Abraham, he refused to allow Isaac to leave the area. He would not allow that. "You can do anything else. You got to go to the land," he told his servant. "You have to go to the land of my forefathers, of my family, and you have to find a wife for Isaac there. But even if you don't find anyone for Isaac, do not take him there." And he is adamant about it. And yet here in verse 2, Isaac to his son, he says, "Arise, go to Padam Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother." And if you remember back in our study, that was the very household that Isaac's wife was taken from. Now, she came willingly. I don't want it to sound like they stole her away, but she came willingly, and it was in fact Laban's sister that becomes Isaac's wife. And so Isaac says, instead of what Abraham says, "Don't go into the land," he says, "Jacob, go. Go to the land." And maybe it's because he knows the situation with Esau. Maybe the two need separated for a time. And it does, in fact, work out well for the time. And they do come back together later on and work some things out. But instead of the way Abraham handled things, he says, "You go. Go to Bethuel. Go to my family's house. Go and find a bride from Laban, your uncle." And he says, verse 3, "May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may be an assembly of people," which is a lot of people, "and give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your descendants with you, that you may inherit the land in which you are a stranger, which God gave to Abraham." So Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Padam Aram to Laban, the son of Bethuel of Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. And so he gives you the whole lineage there and the whole concept of what's going on. He's got a little family tree going on here. But the important thing, verses 3 and 4, is not only that he blesses him once more, but he recognizes that the blessing that is most significant is the blessing that comes through Abraham. It went from Abraham to Isaac. Isaac being the choice, the chosen son of Abraham, became the one who would inherit all the promises of God to Abraham. And he recognizes, Isaac then recognizes Jacob as his heir according to that promise. Not Esau. Even though, as we looked at last week, Esau is his favorite son because he goes out and hunts and finds meat. He recognizes that he gave the blessing to Jacob, and it belongs to Jacob now, and there is no going back. And so he is the favored son in that capacity now. And so he sends him out to go find a bride, and so he does. In Genesis chapter 28, starting in verse 12, he says, Jacob receives a dream, and you might remember this, and most people know at least a reference to this from games that you play with string. He says, "Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on earth, and its top reached to heaven, and there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it." And so he's got this metaphoric ladder. Right? And to say that there's a ladder that exists, and you have to say, well, it's a spiritual ladder, because angels are spiritual creatures, so it's not one that you can climb to get to heaven. But on it, angels are descending, or descending, and they're ascending. They're going up and down from heaven, which is God's working in the world, a symbolic nature of that. And that angels are still active and doing things in the world there in chapter 28 and verse 12. "And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham your father and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and your descendants." He's laid down, he took a rock from the place, and he laid his head there. He's on his way to Haran, to his uncle's house to find a bride. And he sleeps and he dreams this dream about the one who rules the angels who ascend and descend this ladder. And this one who stands at the top and commands the things that are done to be done, he says, "I am the God of your father and of his father." He says, "Also your descendants," verse 14, "shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and the east, to the north and the south. And in you and in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed." He's repeating this, and this is incredibly significant because, as you probably understand in the Old Testament, especially in the Law of Moses, that all claims, everything that is ever set up, everything, every witness that is ever established, it is always established on two or three witnesses. On two or three witnesses. And so you have prosecutions coming down to whether you have enough witnesses of the things that have transpired. Enough reputable witnesses, I should say. And so God has promised to bless the people of Israel, which is what we know them as, the people of Abraham's descendants through Isaac, through Jacob. And in that relationship with God, they are going to not only be blessed and number as the dust of the earth, or as he would tell Abraham and Isaac, the stars in the sky. But also, and more importantly to us, he is going to bless all peoples. And so he repeats this promise, not just to Abraham. "Oh, it's going to go to your descendants, but I'm not actually going to tell your descendants." Then he tells Isaac. But he say, "Well, you know what, I'll just leave it at that. We've got two." No, he goes to the three patriarchs, is what they're called, of the Old Testament. And that would be Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He goes to all three of them and repeats this same promise to supplant it, to implant it, there we go, on these individuals to make sure it is a sure thing. And in verse 16, "Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, Surely the Lord is in this place. And an interesting thing he says, I did not know it. I did not recognize," and maybe he is very much like what the Israelites would become later, what many of the nations around about the Israelites became. They thought that gods were cultural, right? They only belonged to certain areas. And perhaps that's his understanding. As we go to Laban, we're going to see even worse of an understanding of the relationship between man and God. Because Laban, we find out, has idols. It seems like he doesn't even recognize the God of heaven and earth in the same capacity that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob did, though I suppose Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob have a first-hand relationship with the God of heaven and earth. But we're going to continue here in Genesis chapter 29 in verse 1. He says, "So Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. And he looked and saw a well in the field. And behold, there were three flocks of sheep laying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouths." Go down to verse 10. He says, "And it came to pass when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban and his mother's that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother." Now, this is an interesting thing here in verse 10, because he sees two things that motivate him to water the flock. He sees Rachel, which we find out is a very lovely woman, and he sees the flock of sheep that belong to Laban. And I'm wondering, like, give it a percentage of which is more important to him in this relationship here. He's saying, well, Laban has a lot of sheep, and they're very nice sheep. Or is it primarily Rachel that he's interested in? It doesn't really say here in verse 10 anyway. Though we go forward and it seems very important to him. But we'll pick this up again in a second. It actually becomes a topic of discussion as we keep going. Verse 11, "Then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept." He's got the start of a relationship with her. He's very interested in this young woman. "And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. Then it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him." So he's been getting kissed all over the place now. "And brought him to his house. So he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, 'Surely you are my bone and my flesh.'" Relations, right? "We are family," he says. "And he stayed with him for a month. Then Laban said to Jacob, 'Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be?'" So Jacob is involved in the proceedings of the familial relationship. He's taking some of Laban's burden as work, and he's doing some of those things. He's involved in it. And Laban says, "Is it right for you to just work for nothing? I mean, just because we're relatives, just because we're family, doesn't mean you shouldn't get something out of it." And so Laban had two daughters, verse 16 says. "The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel." Verse 17, "Leah's eyes were delicate." Now, you don't want to get the wrong idea from the word delicate here. It doesn't mean the same thing as we sometimes mean, because we're very politically correct. And you say, "She has delicate eyes," right? It means that they're very pleasant, right? They're very nice. They're not too harsh. That's not what they mean here. Literally, the word is weak. Which may mean she had a lazy eye. Which is an interesting concept when you're talking about the visual aspects. He's already seen Rachel. He already has interest in Rachel. And Leah, her sister, may very well have a lazy eye. He says, "But Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance." So Jacob loved Rachel. Or now Jacob loved Rachel. I'm glad that word is not so. Yeah, right? The comparison is all I care about. She's beautiful. This lady's got a lazy eye. So I love Rachel instead of Leah. That's not quite what he's saying. He says, "Now Jacob loved Rachel. So he said, 'I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter.' And Laban said, 'It is better that I give her to you than that I should give her to another man. Stay with me.'" Now you would consider that to be complete assent. I agree to the relationship that we are going forward with, all right? This agreement that we have. You're going to work 7 years, and when the 7 years are over, I'm going to give you the daughter that you asked for. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. What a marvelous passage. That's one of the greatest verses, I think, concerning the relationship between a potential husband and wife. And so they have this agreement, and Jacob is happy to fulfill that agreement, work for 7 years, just so he can have the hand of this woman that he loves. And then Jacob said to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her." In verses 22 through 25, Laban deceives. He gives Leah, his other daughter, and notice in verse 26 how he argues that it's the right thing to do. "And Laban said, 'It must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn.'" He says, "Leah's my firstborn. She's the older daughter. It is not politically correct. It is not acceptable in our culture to give the daughter that you're asking for. So I'm going to give you Leah instead." And it was a trickery, right? He didn't see whose which wife or which daughter he was getting before the marriage was enacted. And so he says in verse 27, Laban, this is going to be the gist of the story, is there's an agreement that's made. Jacob's going to keep his agreement, and Laban's just not going to keep his agreement. In verse 27, he says, fulfill her week. That is to say the word seven. Fulfill her seven, which is another 7 years by implication. And we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve with me, still another 7 years. Well, he's got a great deal for him now. Jacob, I got a great deal for you. I know you got tricked out of it now, but we'll just tack on another 7 years. It'll be like nothing. You'll be fine, and then you'll have the wife that you want, as well as the wife that you didn't want. Whatever. In verse 28, then Jacob did so and fulfilled her week, her 7 years, so he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. So Laban finally concedes to this agreement. He finally fulfills his end of the bargain. And if we turn over to Genesis chapter 30, in verse 25, we've got another agreement with Jacob and Laban. Jacob's been living there for a good long time. He lived there for, quite a while before he had this agreement with Laban. Then he served 7 years for Leah, 7 years for Rachel. So he's up to 14 years now with Laban. And Laban has been prospering. His flocks have been growing. The benefits have been completely in Laban's favor. And in verse 25, it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my country. He says, it's time. He says, I've got a family now. I've got to think about those individuals. They're going to be the ones that get set up in this kingdom that God is going to bring me. They are going to be the descendants, and I'm supposed to go back. So send me away. Send me, and not in a bad way. He's saying, send me on my way. All right? Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service, which I have done for you. And Laban said to him, please stay, if I have found favor in your eyes, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. He didn't say, I'd like you to stay because you've done a lot of good for me, and I want to reward you. He says, I don't want to lose my shiny new thing. He says, you have come in really handy around here, and things have gone better than they've ever gone before. And I can tell that the Lord, the God that you serve, is blessing you, and by implication, blessing me. I want to lose that. So he says, verse 28, name me your wages, and I will give it. And that's kind of the funny thing as we go forward. He says, name your price. How much is it going to cost me to have you stay? He says, for what you had before I came, verse 29, you know how I served you and how your livestock has been with me, how I've taken care of it and how it's been blessed and how it's grown. For what you had before I came was little and it increased to a great amount. The Lord has blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I also provide for my own house? I've been helping you all this time. I haven't done anything for my own house. So he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. For you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flock. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted sheep, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages. He says, whatever is born, he says, don't give me anything now. Whatever is born of the flock that is speckled or spotted or brown, depending on the designation of the ram or the lamb, he says, that's going to be mine. Nothing now. I don't want any of the sheep that you have. But as they give birth to other sheep, he says, as the rams give birth to other rams, the ones that are of these designations, they will go to me. So I'm not taking anything from you now. But we'll work this out so that I will get my reward inevitably as I do good work, as I continue taking care of your sheep, and you continue to be blessed, so then you will bless me in return. So my righteousness, verse 33, is really, really important. So my righteousness will answer for me in time to come when the subject of my wages comes before you. Every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it is with me. He says, all of the number of your lambs, of your rams, if I take any of the ones you have right now, he says, they're stolen. And I accept that. Allow this agreement to be between us that my righteousness might be upheld, he says, so that the agreement would be maintained, so that it would be not only agreed upon with both of us, but that it would be known. so that I'm not accused of anything. That's really, really important as we go forward. In verse 36, then he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flock. Now the second half of that verse is really what's important. Notice, he gets access to what he needs, and he continues doing what he has agreed to do. Jacob is a man of character. He is a man who does what he says he is going to do. He keeps his word. He keeps his agreements. And notice as we turn over to chapter 31, and you can go back into Genesis chapter 30 and you can see how Jacob uses, in a sense, biology. He uses a manipulation not of specific genes, but of crossbreeding. Ways in which he can help the situation. He puts animals together that are going to help the proceedings, and for whatever reason he does it, that's what he does, and he is blessed because of it. All right, the lambs that he is going to receive end up being the strongest. And the ones that Laban is going to keep in the agreement that they have, they're going to be the weakest. So there is no helping it. In verse 20, actually chapter 31, I turned too many pages, verse 1, notice he says, now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all this wealth. So Laban's sons have taken after Laban, it seems. And they're not happy with the agreement that Laban made with Jacob, and so they're making accusations, whether they knew of the agreement that Laban had with Jacob or not. They're seeing Jacob go out into the field and take speckled and spotted and brown animals from the field, and they say, well, that's just not right. Well, that belongs to my father for whatever reason, whether it's through deceit or whether it's through ignorance. And notice verse 2, and Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. So the whole situation is changing. And he starts seeing this change in Laban. Laban taking advantage of it. Laban's heart being turned from Jacob. Laban's heart being turned especially by his sons. And notice in verse 3, then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you. He says, you're in a bad situation right now. Get out of it. Right? Pick up tail and run. It's time to go. It's time to take the proceeds of your work. It's time to take your wives and your 12 children, technically more than 12, 12 sons anyway. And it's time to hightail it out of this area because Laban is not happy. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah in the field to his flock and said to them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable toward me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father. Because Jacob is a man of honor. He honors the agreements that he makes. He keeps his word, and he does not take advantage of those around him, even, as we've seen with Laban, even with individuals who take advantage of him. He will not take advantage of Laban, though he has opportunity, though he has potential to do so. He refuses to do so. In verse 7, he says, yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. And it's not sure whether that's literally or figuratively. He's saying, he's changed my wages a lot. And he could specifically be talking about 10 times. In fact, he would go on. He says, but God did not allow him to hurt me. Nothing that Laban's connivings, nothing that his deception ever created, nothing that he ever did in that response, it didn't affect me. And he actually goes on, he said, if he said thus, remember, he's changing his wages. Yeah, Laban agreed, everything that's speckled, everything that's spotted, and everything that's brown that comes out of this flock, it belongs to you, Jacob. If he had said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages, then all the flock bore streaked. So God has taken care, taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. He says, these are all situations that I had no effect over. I don't control whether an animal comes out speckled or striped or brown. I'm sorry, but I don't have control over it. It doesn't work that way. It is that God had decided in this very special way to produce a situation where Laban was being rejected by God's favor. And Jacob, because of the relationship he had not only with God and his references to Laban and his willingness to do what is right, was rewarded by God. And this was one way that Jacob's wealth and his ultimate favor in God was magnified. And so we keep going, and he says, and I love that, he says, there's nothing I can help. He said, it didn't really bother me. So Laban comes to me, he changes it, remember, 10 times. He says, okay, now you're going to get the speckled. Right? Because the stripes have been coming out lately, so I'm going to change it to speckles, and I'm going to get all the sheep now. And then, all of a sudden, all the sheep that come out, they're speckled now. And then he's like, well, we're going to change it back to stripe. And then all of a sudden, they start coming out stripes again. What, just the brown ones are yours? Oh, they're all brown! You remember what he said a couple of chapters ago when he first established this agreement. In order to establish, he says, my righteousness, we're going to make this agreement and we are going to know that it was made before God. Because it's about my word. And though Laban's word is going to change, God is not going to allow that to affect Jacob. Now verse 36. So, Jacob flees Laban. Remember, he's 3 days away right now, and he takes the opportunity to take his flocks and his wives and his children with him, and he hightails it away just as God told him to. And what he doesn't know is that his favored wife Rebecca, or Rachel, I'm sorry, his favored wife Rachel steals the house idols. The idols from the household of Laban. And the individuals find out about it in Laban's household, and he says, well, it must have been Jacob. Which is the funny thing, because Jacob has done nothing to be the cause of suspicion here, and yet he's the first suspect. And so they chase him down, and you have here a confrontation between Laban and Jacob. And in verse 36, Jacob gets angry. He says, then Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban, and Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? Why are you chasing me down? He says, what have I done wrong? Although you have searched all my things, though, if you read back, Rachel was sitting on it. Though you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren that they may judge between us both. He says, bring it forward. You got evidence? Bring it out. Because I'm getting tired of this. So he says, lay it out. Lay out the evidence so that we can be a judge, and they can be a judge, and your people can be a judge, and we can all figure out what's going on. He says, these 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. He said, not once did I take from you. And even in the agreement that we had, I didn't take from you. He says, that which was torn by beasts, remember, a shepherd was responsible, right? That if animals died in his care, because of his negligence mostly, that he was responsible for paying for them. But if they died in a way that they could not be helped, you were to bring back evidence. That's what some of the things that David is talking about when he discusses his role as a shepherd. But he says, that which was torn by beasts, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was. In the day, the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed my eyes. I've done nothing but everything right before you. I've taken care of your flocks, and you've seen bounty because of me. And you even recognized that it was because of me that all these things worked out for you. And now you're going to chase me down and accuse me of things, though technically I am in an indirect way guilty of. I just don't know it yet. He says, I have done nothing against you. Technically, Jacob hadn't. Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock. And that's one reason I say he looked at the woman and then he looked at the flock. He served 14 years for Rachel only because he had been tricked into it. He actively served. He served 6 years for the flock. I don't know what kind of percentage that yields out to, but this guy had an interest in the flock as well. He says there in verse 42, actually in verse 41, he accuses him again, and you have changed my wages 10 times. You've done nothing but try to manipulate me out of what is mine. And I've taken it. I've taken it for one particular reason, verse 42. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac, that is to say, the one whom Isaac fears, right? You got to get in the right direction. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you at last, he says. So what's he saying there? Jacob says, I have been doing all the right things all of this time. I've been making all the right decisions. I've been letting these things slide. When you were taking from me and requiring me to pay for the animals that were lost, even though they weren't in my care, even though they were stolen during your time of supposed to be taking care of them, even though you've changed my wages 10 times, God has still blessed me, and He is keeping you from disturbing me. And he says, I've had enough. I've had enough of it. The truth of the matter, he says, comes out. And I'm done. And Laban answered and said to Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and this flock is my flock. He's got all the wrong ideas here. All that you see is mine, but what can I do this day to these my daughters, or to their children whom they have borne? Now therefore come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. And if I were Jacob, I would say, I ain't have none of it. Laban's just going out, well, everything that that you have, everything that you see, my daughter, wait a second, I'm pretty sure I worked 14 years for both of them. You tricked me once already. And I'm pretty sure I worked 6 years for what I did get, and I didn't take a thing from you. And now you're going to tell me that all this stuff is yours, and you want a covenant? Now he does make the covenant, and Jacob does abide by the covenant, and Laban technically abides by his end of the covenant. But verse 42 is the significant aspect here. Why was Jacob willing to do all those things? Why is any righteous, humble, honest man willing to be righteous, honest, and humble in an ungodly world? Because, brethren, we deal with Laban's every day. We deal with Laban's every day. People who will lie, steal, and cheat to get what they want. And how do we handle that? How do we deal with people like that? Jacob's got a fairly good response. In Proverbs chapter 3, in verse 27. Proverbs chapter 3, in verse 27, he says, do not withhold good from those to whom it is due. When it is in your power, within the power of your hand, to do so. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it, when you have it with you. He says, if you are an honest man, it doesn't matter the circumstances, you are going to be an honest man. And that includes women too. I'll just go ahead and throw that out there. When you are an honest person, you are not honest because of the other person. You are honest because of you. And more importantly, you are honest because of God. Jacob was an honest man. He was a righteous man. He kept his agreements. He did what he said he was going to do. He kept his word in every matter. Not because Laban was a great guy. Not because he felt bad for Laban. Not because he himself was necessarily a good man. But because of God and his relationship with God. Because God was taking care of him. And to all of us, I ask the same question that Paul asked those people in Rome. Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, he says, and we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to His purpose. That's Jacob. Called according to His purpose. God had designated Abraham, Isaac, and ultimately Jacob in this line of individuals who through them would bless the entire world, made promises to them, repeated those promises, led them through the difficult times. And he did it all for his own glory, and these individuals were blessed because of it. Because they were workers in God's kingdom. The way before God's kingdom was understood in the way it is now. They understood very small things compared to what we understand, and yet they were willing to do it because of their relationship with God. How can we be any different? He says in verse 37, yet in all these things we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. What kind of things? He says in verse 35, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? That's exactly what Jacob said. And when I was out in the field, you were at your house and the fire, and I had the frost. I dealt with the long nights of not sleeping. I was the one out in the field dealing with beasts and animals, and you were the one requiring me to pay for it. Yet in all these things, we are more than conquerors, he says. Not just conquerors. We don't just get through it. We are magnified through it. That when we take these opportunities to do God's will, even when it comes to suffering and distress and persecution, and He says nakedness or peril or sword, in all of these things, we are not just conquerors who win the day. We are conquerors who win more than the day. Because we are not just helped through this life. We are helped through this life onto a greater life. Onto a better life. And he says in verse 38, "For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angel, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus our Lord." And we'll end this evening with 2 Peter chapter 2. If you are not God's people, if you are not part of the selected, part of the chosen in Christ, if you have not put your life in His hands, if you are not washed and redeemed in His blood, if you've not, Acts chapter 2, verse 42 and 47, been added to the church because you've been saved. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. "Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment." Verse 17, he picks up, he says, "These are wells without water." That's Laban. "These are wells without water, clouds carried by the tempest, for whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. For when they speak great swelling words of emptiness, they allure through the lusts of the flesh, through lewdness, the ones who have actually escaped from those who live in error." Verse 19, "While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. For by whom a person is overcome, by him also he is brought into bondage." He says, we are more than conquerors, Paul. Paul says we are more than conquerors than these people. We don't just get through these situations. God blesses us and bountifully and overwhelmingly if we are in Him. Ephesians chapter 1 would tell us that all spiritual blessings in heavenly places come through Jesus Christ. That those are the most magnificent things. Even though we might lose out on some of the things here on this earth and some of the pleasures that we can experience and some of the things that go on in this world, there is greater and more precious promises awaiting us. If we, like Jacob, will overcome. We are not these things. We are not great humanitarians. We are not great human beings. We are not even faithful because we are great people. We can only be faithful because Christ has made it possible. We can only be redeemed. We can only be the church. Not because we have done some amazing thing. Not because we have kept the law perfectly and we have earned it ourselves. But because the grace of God has come, and it has come in spades, and we have accepted it. If you need to accept the grace of God this day, to be washed and redeemed, you have a greater promise than even Jacob. And though you might be in situations in this life where the world is trying to overtake you, cheat you out of your reward, it might cheat you out of a lot of things because you're an honest person. It might finagle you out of your goods and the services in this world. The one thing, Romans chapter 8 tells us, that it cannot finagle you out of. The only person that can give it up is you. They can't take your salvation. They can't take your position in heaven. You are the only one who can affect that. And if you are strong and of good courage, as Joshua would tell the people of God as he's about to die, you can be strong and of good courage as well. If we are willing to do that, we can overcome this world. Be more than conquerors of this world. We can go on to something greater. Something more amazing. And if you need this day to be washed and redeemed in Christ's blood, you need to put Christ on in baptism to be saved, added to the church, you can do that this day. And if you need to come back to Him because you've walked away, because the world has finagled it out of you, has tricked you into doing its will, bamboozled you into giving up your place in heaven, you can come back. As long as you have breath in your lungs, as long as your life on earth is, you can change. And it is now that needs to be changed. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation today, I pray that you would come as we stand and sing.